Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
This is Goop Yourself, the podcast where we talk about everything Goop. I'm Brian Rucker.
I'm Agnes Ewood.
I'm listening to the dulcet tones of my next door neighbor, who is a professional saxophonist, I think. Just, he like practices all day, and it's actually really nice.
That's nice.
It's sort of like having a little Kenny G right out my window.
Yeah. Wait, doesn't Kenny G play... Oh yeah, he does play the saxophone, right?
Yeah, he plays like the... I think... I don't know. I'm not a good enough music scholar to know what type of saxophone this guy's playing, but I think it sounds a little different than the Kenny G. It's like a... I assume he's playing... I haven't seen it. I assume he's playing like the classic, you know, Bill Clinton style saxophone.
We watched a good documentary about Kenny G like a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, I saw that. It was good.
It was interesting. He's an interesting man.
He is, like, it, because he's so ambitious commercially. Oh my god, I just saw a pigeon shit right next door out of my window. he's sitting on a satellite dish at my next door neighbor's, on top of my next door neighbor's house, and then he just took a shit, and then he flew off. What a king.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kenny G, so like, he was like, I want to be like a huge star, and he's like, and he just made it happen.
I can't talk about it. I can't talk about having a good career right now. It's like, it'll kill me. The only person with a career that I want to talk about is Gwyneth. You know what? I think part of the reason I'm so fixated on her and like love her so much is like, I never stood a chance. Like, I was never going to be Gwyneth Paltrow. No, it's not even like a looks thing or a talent thing or anything. It's like, the nepotism kind of makes it easier to swallow. I would hate her more if she was like, I went to high school with her.
Oh, if I went to high school with her, I would hate her so much. I can't even imagine.
It would be, I couldn't function.
If I went to high school with someone as, oh my God, as successful as her, yeah, I would just kill myself.
But I did go to high school with some like beautiful, successful in show business.
Yeah, you went to high school in LA, so I feel like there's, it's like a different...
I get like excited and I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, that's good.
But if it was Gwyneth Paltrow, they're not Gwyneth Paltrow. Like,
no.
I mean, they're, so if they were, maybe I would feel differently. I don't know.
There was a, probably one of the worst editorials I've ever read published this week about Gwyneth Paltrow and her nepotism.
Tell me.
It was in Forbes magazine.
Wow.
This is the state of my Google alerts on Gwyneth. It was a guy, his name is John Tammy.
Okay.
And he looks like sort of like a D-list Tucker Carlson type.
I mean, I can't even imagine that, because Tucker Carlson already looks so washed up and fucked up.
This guy looks like, yeah, like pokey, sort of
pokey.
Like a little bloated, like sort of, you know, good looking in a traditional sense, but like
an alcoholic.
Yeah, bloated.
Okay.
Like Wall Street guy.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't know why this, I was like because I usually have my Google alerts of being like, you know, what articles have people published about Gwyneth in the past week?
Yeah.
And I saw this and the title of the editorial said, "Contra Gwyneth Paltrow's spoiled critics, there are no Nepo stars." And I'm like, this what? Nepo baby conversation is something that was had like a year or two ago. I was like, what purpose was this editorial? Why was it published in January of 2024? It seemed like very behind the curve. Yeah. I really have a terrible degenerative neurological disease.
I will be in the middle of a sentence and forget what I was about to say. I'm terrified and I don't want to find out what was wrong with me.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. So this guy, he starts off by talking about the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom. Did you watch this?
It sounds familiar. What is it about?
It was about backup singers. It was like a good documentary about
the
lives of backup singers, blah, blah, blah. So he says, it's worth repeating again that those 20 Feet from Stardom are extraordinarily talented. That they are, the writing on it, like, it's going to sound like I have Alzheimer's, but I promise that, like, this is how bad the writing is. I'm just saying it verbatim. Them. That they are speaks to what was arguably the most interesting aspect of the documentary. Those who perform behind the lead singer are frequently as talented or more talented than the individual they're backing up. Yet they perform away from the center because they lack the essential charisma required to be the front man or woman. This is worth thinking about with movie star and entrepreneur Gwyneth Paltrow top of mind. Like, what? No one should have Gwyneth Paltrow top of mind except for you and me.
That's right. And all, you, our listeners.
And yes, and our listeners. And this guy I don't think listens. No. As most know, Paltrow is the daughter of the late great television producer Bruce Paltrow, The White Shadow, St. Elsewhere, etc., and actress Blythe Danner. For her parents alone, Paltrow is entertainment royalty, at which point her ex-husband, with whom she has two children, is Coldplay frontman Chris Martin. That's not a sentence. No one is proofreading this guy. In a recent interview, again, wrong. This interview was like 50,000 years ago. Paltrow contended that the quote-unquote Nepo baby characterization that some might apply to her and perhaps eventually to her kids is an ugly moniker. She's more than right.
This again.
Yeah, we're rehashing. And so this guy just goes on and he's just like defending her against her critics. I don't know.
Well, he's defending her.
Well, I'm not like, I mean, I'm just like, why are we talking about this now? And why is this in Forbes magazine? Though it's certainly true, and Paltrow presumably wouldn't deny it, that the children of stars have access to entertainment decision makers that typical wannabe actor or actress initially, decision makers that the typical wannabe actor and actress initially does not. It's no insight to say that Hollywood is an incredibly quantitative industry defined by a relentless pursuit of profits. Applied to Paltrow, if she lacked that certain something in the charisma sense that actors and actresses must have, her parents' professional successes and connections born of those successes wouldn't have meant anything.
I'm sorry. I mean, excuse me?
Basically saying, like, you do get a foot in the door, but, like, unless you have some inherent star quality, your career's not going to last. And I agree
in theory. That's true. I agree with that. I think, and we've seen people even become extremely successful and then completely crash and burn. I mean, just because you have a famous parent, I'm talking about Max Landis, obviously, but I'm my deepest obsession, but just because you have a famous and successful parent doesn't mean that you'll be able to, like, execute once you get your foot in the door and, like maintain a career for as long as she has. Like, there are a lot of children of celebrities who are nowhere near as successful as she is. And she's more probably successful than her, sorry, Blythe mother, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Probably father, too.
No, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm just questioning, like, why, like, no one is talking about this, and, like, why was this in Forbes magazine this week? That's the only thing I'm questioning.
Well, because Forbes, I don't know.
I think they're just, like, you know, a tool of the status quo.
Well, also Gwyneth, you know, I don't know. I feel like they're coming to her defense. She probably had a meeting there or something. She like, there's, she's so businessy.
Yeah. She's so from like one entrepreneur to another.
Wait, I have a question about Gwyneth, because I have an embarrassing admission kind of, but have you seen the James Gray film Two Lovers?
You know what? I'm going to share your embarrassing admission. I obviously love Gwyneth Paltrow. I really love James Gray, and I have never seen that movie.
Okay, I'll do you one better. I had never heard of that movie.
Oh, with Joaquin. I've heard of it, and I remember it coming out, and it was like before we had started the podcast, so I was sort of...
Yeah, Gwyneth it was in 2008. Not,
yeah, Gwyneth wasn't top of mind at that moment, and no, so I just missed it. Yeah.
But we should listen, watch it. It's on the Criterion Channel, and I'm like... What? This is a dark romantic New York drama with Gwyneth Paltrow and Joaquin Phoenix. And I think it's supposed to be like she's rich and he's from the wrong side of the tracks or something.
We got to see it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely watching that. And I think that you guys should all watch it too if you haven't seen it.
It was sort of like her last sort of serious movie before she started just being like Goop and Pepper Potts.
I was shocked when I saw her. I was like, Gwyneth? Because I just didn't even, I don't know. I saw her on the on the homepage, and I was like, what is that?
Gwyneth on Criterion. So then this guy there, but, so. This guy basically, his argument then becomes, because we are Americans, we are all Nepo babies. So this is sort of like what you were saying earlier before we got on the mic.
I don't think so.
As Americans, we're born on second base, as is, for being born into the world's language. The language we come to this guy's obviously, English is not his first language. The language we come to naturally is what the ambitious the world over work feverishly to learn in order to fulfill their ambitions. Say that three times fast. Okay. After that, when you're born in the United States, you're the inheritor of the staggering fruits of wealth created by those before you. In short, we're all Nepo babies for having been born American.
Well, that's obviously stupid.
But this should be kept well in mind the next time some unwittingly fortunate critic chooses to shrink the achievements of those whose only fault might be that talented people chose to have children. And then his cokehead picture.
I feel like I'm kind of two minds about it. I don't like that the phrase Nepo baby has kind of become like a cultural touch point so that it kind of distracts from the eternal question of like the legitimacy of nepotism, which is not a new thing, and that's not like a buzzword thing, but if you call someone a Nepo baby, well, that's like a fun thing. They can make it a t-shirt. We can be like, is Gwyneth Paltrow bad? But like, nepotism is something worthy of examining, and like, it's irritating to like that it's like turned into like cultural shorthand thing that's like passe to discuss or whatever, when it's like never really, it's always a good time to talk about nepotism. But also I love Gwyneth Paltrow, and I just said I really do think to an extent then her like nepotism and like the inherent inequality of it is almost comforting, because it's like, I know my place.
Yeah, well, it's like how the British love the royal family. It's comforting. Why the
Brits, and hate them, you know, because it's like, they're literally, when I went to, I was like with my dad, and we went to some like old castle in Northumberland, and there was a sign like modern, like from maybe the 40s or something, that was like when like the servants would like on the way down to like the servants' quarters, and it just said "Know Your Place" painted above their stairwell as like they walked down, and we were both like, "That's us. That's for us. Know Your Place," because we know like we're trash. Like we're not like, as Lord said, we'll never be royals, and like,
Well, and it's comforting to have an excuse for your own lack of success when you say, well, like, I was just born unlucky.
I was born unlucky. I have like naturally like dumb loser genes and like I'll just be a piece of shit forever. But on the other hand, I think that there is being born into that world gives you a lot, like, yes, you do need a certain amount of like actual talent to sustain it. But when he said that totally weird sentence about the world's language or something, there is also like a language of, there's like a class language like that people speak, like an unspoken language that like tells you what class somebody comes from. And you can tell, even I think that there are differences between like rich people and like upper middle class people and middle class people and lower middle, like I think there are cultural differences between all of those groups. And just knowing how to behave as if you are an elite is such an immense privilege. And it doesn't have anything to do with like your, you know, God-given talents. And it's also fair to be like, fuck that. That's not fair. You know, I think that's okay too. And you can carry both of those feelings. You don't have to hate everyone just because their parents were successful, but you don't have to just be like, You don't have to like rush to their defenses either every time, except for I do defend Gwyneth Paltrow, obviously, every time because I love her, but I won't do it for everyone.
Yeah. Like, I think in America, well, because in Britain, it seems like there's, it's like the way you talk, like that literal accent you have is like so determinative, and like people can like pick apart class differences based on the way that you actually sound. Yeah. Whereas in America, it does feel like a little more situational, like, because people
also act like they're slumming it. Like, people, especially when you're like in your 20s, people love to be like, we're poor and I struggled and da da da. And then it's like, no, you were not poor. You did not struggle. This is bullshit.
Yeah. Cause basically you are always like socializing, unless you, there's like an extreme example. Your social circle is usually pretty like specific to your class, like as far as, you know, education and I mean money, like everything. So it all is relative, I guess. But yeah, there is like, especially when you're young, there's a cachet to sort of pretend that you're in more dire straits than you are. And then the opposite, I think, if you do come from a working class background, there's like cultural cachet in pretending to be, or not pretend, but like to, you know, to learning how to not stick out in situations.
To Ripley your way out of it.
To Ripley, yeah. Ripley and reverse Ripley.
And also like, yeah, and also, but like in reality, the cultural cachet is with the people have money.
Yeah, yeah, money is softens all blows.
And that's just how it goes. I don't know, that's how the cookie crumbles, I guess. But the nepotism thing, it's just worth like being aware of it, I guess. And then when those people get in the door and they get arrogant and then they start being cocky and then they fuck up and their careers come crashing down, we love that too. Also a sickness. I mean, like, that's also really disgusting. I used to hate that, and then now I like it, which really makes me sad about the state of my life, because it's like with all of that, like the thing of like building up idols and then enjoying as we're tearing them down. The problem with it has always been on for society, not for like the rich person who's getting humiliated by the public. But it's, the problem is that if you participate in that behavior, you're planting yourself on the outside of success. Like, you're planting yourself out of there. And that's why I think that engaging in that stuff too hard is really bad for you, like spiritually.
Mm. Yeah, I think having an emotional attachment, well, just in general to celebrity culture, like, and this is maybe a poor example, but the Oscar nominations came out this week, and like people were so incensed that Barbie didn't get what, like best actress and best director or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, first of all, maybe I'm just a bit of like a little like Oscar snob because I've been following it for so long, but I'm like, this happens every year. Like, this is not a special occurrence. Like, these big blockbusters never or rarely do as well as some people think that they're going to do. And then getting sort of perturbed on whatever Greta Gerwig or Margot Robbie's behalf is just seems like they don't care about you. So why do you care about them?
Yeah, I was like going through that morning, going through the list of the nominees, and it was fun. And I got to vent about I didn't realize that they came out. And then someone texted and was like, who are your snubs that you're mad about? And then I was like, okay, so that was the like lens I was looking. I was like scrolling through. I was like, who got snubbed? That was how I was reading it, with that in like the front of my mind. And of course, like my biggest disappointment was Natalie Portman. I thought her performance in May, December. I mean, Julianne Moore too.
And Charles Melton. None of the three of them got nominated.
Like, gave this, like, I'm like a totally different, I thought her performance was incredible, but, and I noticed that when I read it, I thought that that's interesting that this movie, was nominated for Best Picture, and it's kind of,
you're talking about Barbie now.
Yeah. Barbie was like kind of defined by those two people, you know. Greta Gerwig, they conceived it and produced it and made it like what they wanted. But I'm not like enraged about it. And I feel like they got the nomination that they sort of deserve for it, because they are nominated for Best Picture, and it probably will not win. And I don't really necessarily think it should win, but I noticed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think like all those nominations, I mean, first of all, picture, you know, has 10, and actor and actress and director only have 5. So it's like not everyone that's nominated for one can be nominated for the other. And then it's so determined by narrative. And I think the sort of Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig they're so successful that it's hard to create a narrative that's going to make people go out of their way to like vote for them, as opposed to Lily Gladstone, or, you know, even like the director of like Anatomy of a Fall, who's like this, you know, German up and coming director who like isn't as famous. So it's just like, I mean, this happens, you know, as I'm reading about the 1999 Oscars with Harvey Weinstein and Gwyneth Paltrow and Shakespeare in Love versus Saving Private Ryan, it's all about narrative. And they didn't have a strong one, personally, for their categories.
Well, has Greta Gerwig won Best Director?
No, I don't think she's won anything. I think she's been nominated for screenplay a few times, and I think she was nominated once for Best Director for Little Women, but I don't think she's won an Oscar, and she's only been nominated for director once, I believe.
But her movies get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, Lady Bird was nominated, Little Women was nominated, and Barbie was nominated.
So every movie she's ever made. No, Frances Ha. Did she make Frances Ha?
She co-wrote it, but she didn't direct it. That was Noah.
Are those the only, those are the only films that she's directed?
I think there's like one old like mumblecore movie that she co-directed back in like 2006. But yeah, basically those are the three movies that she's directed.
I think there's something to be said for a person who has made three movies that have all been nominated for Best Picture and has never been, and isn't being nominated for Best Director.
That's the narrative. That's why next time I'm sure she will be nominated.
But I also, I don't really think the Oscars are like that important. And I feel, except for like for how much people get paid the next year or the next like few years, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I mean, I don't think that they're like a reflect. I think quantifying this stuff is like so silly anyway.
No, they're just a reflection of Hollywood's whatever, like the industry feels like rewarding that year. It obviously has no objective value of quality or anything.
Yeah. So it's just like, whatever. I don't know. I mean, who do you think is going to win Best Director?
Oh, I think Nolan has it sewn up for director and picture. I think it's going to be one of the most boring years. I think there's like no, there's not going to be any sort of suspense.
It's yeah, just, I gonna, think Oppenheim, yeah. I definitely for Best Picture. Fine. Yeah.
No, I'll still watch it, but there's, yeah, I don't know that there's going to be like a big race this year for any of the big categories between, like, I feel like they're all pretty set in stone at this point, so.
I think so too. But I thought that I liked the movies that were nominated.
I liked almost all of the movies that were nominated for Best Picture.
I still have to see Anatomy of a Fall. I still have to see, and I think there's one other one I haven't seen yet, but I'm not sure. Let me look. I just finally saw the Zone of Interest last night.
Oh yeah, what'd you think?
I thought it was good. Not my favorite Holocaust movie of the year, but pretty good.
Ooh, what's your favorite Holocaust movie of the year?
Occupied City, of course.
Oh, of course. God, I still haven't seen that.
I thought that was like very more impactful, but I thought that I wasn't crazy about American Fiction.
Me neither. That's the one that I really didn't like.
I loved The Holdovers. I thought Oppenheimer was okay. I thought it was way too long. Oh, I haven't seen Maestro. That's the other one I have to see. Oh yeah. I haven't seen Past Lives. I haven't seen a bunch of them.
Too many. I just need to watch. I have a lot of like the international and the documentaries and stuff that I need to watch, but I think I've watched all the Best Picture noms.
Yeah.
Well, we have, you know, what, 6 weeks till the Oscars to fill in the blanks.
Yeah, I'll see them. I mean, oh God, the one that I like don't want to watch that feels like homework is Maestro. I know I should watch it.
You know, I liked it fine because I watched it like right when it came out. And then I think when it hit Netflix, there was such a backlash and people seem to really hate it, so now I find myself like defending it even though I don't think it's a great movie, but I'm like, why do you hate it so much?
I get that. Ryan loved it.
I thought it was,
I'm sure I'll like it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was good. The only one out of those Best Picture ones that I really didn't like was American Fiction, but
yeah, I was
just a flabby satire, and you could tell that the book that it was written or it was based on was came out like 20 years ago, and it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense. It like feels, 20 years ago,
yeah. It feels very like, yeah, like McSweeney, like 2003 McSweeney's kind of thing.
And the family drama stuff was like, really?
Yeah, it had these random? Like wild tonal shifts.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't get it. But people love it.
People love it. I know. So that's good.
What else? Oh, poor Marianne only got 4% of the New Hampshire primary, even though Biden wasn't even on the ballot.
I'm over Marianne.
She really did not do a good job with this campaign. It's really embarrassing.
She's not really trying.
I don't know what she's trying to do.
I don't either, but I feel like, because I feel like she's sort of like half given up and half still invested. Like, I don't think she's really, I think she's just kind of pretending to run for fun.
Yeah, because she's not going to run third party. I know that, because she's not a Jill Stein. And then she's not going to endorse Biden until maybe the end. I don't know.
Wait, Jill Stein, I think, is also running again.
Yeah, but the Green Party won't even like let her run. So she's like doing some other, like in like something else. And then I think Cornel West is doing Green Party maybe or something. I cannot keep track. Regardless, I'm still going to vote Marianne for the primary and then the general, you know.
I'm not going to do it because it's too late and I don't want to ever, but I have this like fantasy of switching to Republican and voting for Nikki Haley just to like not vote for Trump, but I think it's already too late. And I don't think it would do anything.
No. And well, yeah, if Nikki Haley did somehow get the nomination, I think she would beat Biden handily, but she's not going to get the nomination, so
I don't want to be like this, but we said it before. I just like so terrified of Trump winning. I cannot stand Trump and I cannot stand, like, I like him like a neutered old joke, but I don't like him for real. And I need like, I hate what he does to the people in this country when he is the president. Like, he makes people act in America even worse and like bigger pieces of shit than they already are.
Yep.
He like gives everyone license to be the biggest asshole in the world.
I don't disagree with you. I wish I could muster up some emotion. But like I was telling you before we started recording, I have no emotion left. And so...
I just think if you could possibly... I mean... I'm exhausted, but I'm still mad.
Yeah.
We say this every year, but this year I literally think if he wins, we're going to leave the country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you can't, you have little British.
But the problem is I would just move to the UK and then, you know, whatever the US does, the UK just does that the exact same thing a year later. So
you can't escape it.
Can't escape it.
I do like, I mean, I agree with you, everything you said about Trump. I do think he was really funny when he insulted Nikki Haley's dress.
Oh, what did he say?
It was just a throwaway line because he was like, she, you know, wasn't, her speech, she didn't sort of sound like she was defeated. And so he was pissed off that she wasn't sort of kissing his ring. And mm-hmm. So he said, you know, something like, oh, and she came out in this fancy dress that actually wasn't that fancy. he's such a bitch. It's like, because I guess her dress only costs like $500. Just little throwaway lines. But yeah. I 100% agree with you. He's a horrible person. He should not be president. So I'll be on the record about that. Okay. Fuck, we're rambling again. We got to do a receipt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Quickly before receipt, just Gwyneth was in Paris for the Armani Privé fashion show, sitting between, I think, next to like Glenn Close and Juliette Binoche. Very cool, I guess.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw that. Oh, my God, she looked... I was like, this is what I want. This is Gwyneth. This is the real Gwyneth. Inaccessible. Rich. Fancy. Elite. Exclusive. Intimidating.
What drugs do people take when they go to Paris for 48 hours? I would get jet lag and then I would be home and get jet lag again. It just seems like so not worth it for me to go to Paris for 48 hours for any reason. But
well, she probably like flies private and like sleeps on the plane.
I can't sleep on a plane, but maybe if I flew private I could sleep.
I'm sure she can sleep.
I once took an Ambien.
It's probably like unimaginable luxury that
I know that I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I took an Ambien on the way to Spain once and I couldn't sleep. And it was like the most torturous experience of my life to like be on Ambien and not being able to sleep.
Yeah.
But she looked great in her little Armani pantsuit.
Yeah, she did. She looked really good.
All right. Anything else before we start the receipt?
No, but tell me about the receipt though.
This was a pretty good one. Just okay. It was sort of a different vibe because this woman works production on it says a premium cable documentary series. So instead of being in one city the whole week, they're shooting in lots of different cities. So she's basically traveling and like going to different cities.
Interesting. I wonder if someone could figure out.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out. We'll see if anyone can figure this out. I don't think the clues are like specific enough to really figure it out, but I'm like, what? So they were in Chicago, Miami, and New York before going back to LA.
I mean, that's too broad.
It's too broad. I was like, Queer Eye? I was like, but Queer Eye goes to like small towns. I was like, what? I don't even know what document. And you're not like a Housewives because you're in all these different cities. And then I other than those, I like literally couldn't think of another show. So I don't know.
I can't think of one either.
All right. So she makes $4,000 a week while she's for this job. But, you know, she's a freelancer, a freelance TV producer, 35 years old. So some years she makes more than others. But luckily for her, her husband is a consultant that makes $300,000 a year. So,
wow.
I would be fucking sitting on the bed eating bonbons all day. I don't really understand why anyone wants to work if they don't have to.
No.
But that's just me. Let's see.
Especially like that kind of job.
I know, because she says she's working like, you know, it's like 12 to 16 hour days. Like TV production, it's like so hard, stressful.
And so thankless and stressful, yeah.
So they have $200,000 in savings. A $9,000 mortgage, which that like gave me a heart attack just thinking about a $9,000 mortgage.
That's so much money. I know.
So crazy. Even for LA, that seems crazy.
That's a lot.
Car payment, $800. Again, what car? I mean, I guess you're leasing like it's a fancy something.
People have to definitely have a Tesla.
Yeah, $800 car payment. A gardener, $200. All these subscriptions, including Aura Ring. $170. So she's spending $10,000 a month just on basically like before expenses. Yeah, before food or anything. Then she says she's ovo lacto vegetarian since she was 5. So she eats dairy and eggs. She says my whole family eats meat.
I think it's annoying when people say they're ovo lacto vegetarians. No offense if you do. It's like I feel like you can just say vegetarian. Isn't that what that means already? Otherwise you're vegan.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like I don't care about it. I mean, I do in the context of reading the receipt, but like in normal life, I don't care about every fucking thing you put in your mouth. Yeah, if you say vegetarian, I'm assuming cheese, eggs.
Otherwise, you'd say vegan. Like we have words for it. Why?
Yeah. So then, obviously she's traveling for work. So they get, because of union rules, they get a meal every 6 hours. They can spend 25 to 30 per meal. And then when they aren't in their home city, they get a $50 meal per diem. Plus, obviously, craft services. Or, as she says, crafty. Because she's in the biz.
Right.
What are the grocery store staples you always buy? Salad greens, onions, ginger, feta, tortillas, roti, rice, bananas, apples, crunchy peanut butter, tofu, lemons, limes, yogurt. Mary's Gone crackers, Soda Stream refills, and Blue Bottle Coffee's Nola concentrate. And this made me jealous because I did this to myself. I ruined my life. But she is a proud member of the Rancho Gordo Bean Club.
Oh, you left and now you can't get back in.
I canceled my membership and then I regretted it and I had to go back on the wait list and I haven't received nary an email from them after 2 years. And I had so many beans in my cupboard that I was never going to make. So it's probably for the best.
And yeah, you don't need that. You don't need those beans. So it's either like too many beans or not enough beans.
And I could go on the website, right? It's not like you can't buy the beans a la carte. Like you don't like, but I don't. And so I really shouldn't be in this bean club.
I don't understand. So you're mad that you're not in the bean club, but you could still buy the beans.
Yeah, so the Bean Club, it's just a quarterly delivery of beans. And you get these, like, special beans that aren't, that, like, they're, like, super heirloom. They're sometimes not the ones that are available on the regular website.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, I had it, and I lost it. And now I want, I gave it up. I gave it up because I had dozens and dozens of pounds of beans in my cupboard. So, you know,
How long did it take you to go through them after you canceled your subscription?
I think I finished them within a year after canceling. But if I didn't cancel, I would have had 20 more. Because you get, I think, 5 pounds every 3 months. So I would have had 20 more pounds of beans.
And then once you're in, you're just in forever.
You're in unless you cancel. And then if you cancel, you're fucked. So, but it's like, it's just such a status symbol. Like, and she's rubs it in.
It's not, though. It's not.
It's really not. It's,
I mean, it is maybe for some people, but for other people, it's not.
And also, like, you know, I'm privileged to live in a neighborhood with a Shopee shop, even though we'll see how long that lasts. Yeah. And they sell, like, they literally sell Rancho Gordo. I could drive 2 minutes and get Rancho Gordo beans if I want.
But you're buying it.
Yeah, but it's not part of the
club. You want them. You want to be on the list.
And what do they have at Wine and Eggs? They have fucking garbanzos. They have black beans. They have pinto beans. I want beans that are colors that I never see in nature. I want beans that have names that I don't recognize. I want beans that I have no idea how long to cook. And that's what you get with the club.
Well, I'm sure that you'll eventually get back on the list. I mean, get back in it, right?
I think it's so popular now that I think they're just humoring me by even receiving my emails. I feel like, because it's been like 3 years since I tried to get back in, and if they haven't contacted me in these 3 years, I think they're not going to contact me.
Well, you never know.
You never know. It could be, but then once I get that email, I don't even think I'll join. Because if I join, I know that I can't cancel again.
And, you know, what are you going to do with these beans?
Nothing. I don't even like beans that much. She also belongs to a CSA that she picks up from someone's house in Highland Park named Stormy.
Okay.
And the CSA is $35 a box. And she says that Stormy is like very eccentric and doesn't even like put like spinach in bags, so it's just like loose, like random spinach leaves.
Oh my god. Okay.
Let's see. And then so she's on the road, so she spends $429 for the week in food, which if you're on the road, I mean, it's like sort of a lot, but it's not crazy at all. If you're not cooking at all?
No, I guess not.
And she's getting most of it paid for from work.
Yeah.
So she starts on Monday. She wakes up in Madison, Wisconsin. And she went the night before, she had gone to a Lou Malanti's, the Chicago style pizza chain in Madison.
Wait, you said that wrong, but now I can't think of
how. Wait, it says Malnati's is the way.
It does. The way you said it sounded wrong, but now I literally can't think of it. It's like Illuminati's.
I'm sounding it out.
No, that's how it. Maybe that is. Maybe it's just. Lou Malnati, I guess.
I think I probably emphasized, I was speaking.
It's just the way you said it sounded so insane.
But I'm not a Chicagoan.
But I guess that's how it is supposed to sound. I think that this was the good one, actually.
Oh, in Madison? That's like the one that's supposed to be good?
Well, I think it's I think it's a chain.
Yeah. No, she was at the one in Madison.
Yeah, no, not the one in Madison. I mean, I think like, because like some of them are like Gino's East was like, that one's bad.
Mm.
But I think this one was good.
I've been to Lou Malnati's in Chicago. It was very good. But this was, you know.
Yeah.
I like anything that's deep dish filled with cheese and garbage, I like. So
once in a while, it's nice. It's just annoying when the only pizza you can get is either that or like they're like tavern style party squares and you can't get like a regular pizza.
Regular size, yeah. So in Madison, she gets a tofu scramble at a place called Marigold Kitchen. Then that night, she goes to another place called Forage Kitchen. And she gets a boring kale bowl that she says it is indeed healthy and late, but the kale could really use a massage.
I hate when you get fibrous kale.
I know, it's disgusting. Maybe in Madison they haven't figured out how to massage kale yet. It's behind the times.
Maybe. I don't know.
And then they're in, you know, a mid-range city. So guess what people like to do in those mid-range cities? A little craft beer spot.
Oh, of course.
I thought
you were going to say go to the Cheesecake Factory.
I wish. No, this place is called Camp Tripolindi.
Okay.
And it's an 80s camp themed burger and craft beer spot with tableside s'mores. And she hates it. She absolutely hates it.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
She orders, it's called a Wisconsin Whopper, but she substitutes, because she's a vegetarian, so she substitutes a bean burger. And then she says, ultimately, our food arrives lukewarm at best. The fries are cold. The bean burgers seem like they've been reheated from frozen. I didn't love it and only ate a few bites of my veggie burger. I'm grateful for that 4 p.m. kale salad.
Oh, wow.
And then she says the s'mores kit comes in plastic baggies with only 3 marshmallows for 4 people. I've never seen anyone really destroy a restaurant.
Well, except for that one woman who, remember that woman who like went out to restaurant with, like she kept going out to dinner with her dad and being like, my parents made me go to this shitty place.
Was that the Eugene lady?
I can't remember. I think so. I think yeah. She was that the same woman who then like got like blackout drunk and she like had like 12 cocktails in a day?
Yeah, the one that was like stumbling down the road, like going from
like she was like friends with everyone who like owned every bar, and she was like, and I had to go in here and I had to go in there.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah, although I do think she might have been like playing it up because she wanted to like highlight everyone.
I feel like all these people are playing it up, and I would do the same.
Yeah.
So the next day they go back to Chicago, and she gets a melanzana pizza with fresh mozzarella.
What's that?
I think melanzana is eggplant, right? I don't know why she doesn't just say eggplant.
Oh, because she's fancy.
She's fancy, yeah. And then she says she gets a smart water, but at home I wouldn't be caught dead with a disposable water bottle. But on the road, let's shed a single tear for my carbon footprint.
Never mind. I don't want anyone.
You know, you're going to get canceled.
New York, whatever. They're like, it's the best tap water. I don't think my building. No, the water here, I think the pipes are rusted or something. The water tastes like shit.
Oh, really? Because the tap water in New York is like a million times better than the tap water in LA.
It literally tastes so bad in my building. The that's what they always say. But like, I put it in the filter, it still tastes like shit. It's just bad. So I buy my water
in plastic.
Well, you can't buy it in glass.
I mean, you can if you do.
I guess I could if I want to. Whole Foods or something, but I can't afford it. I go to the, you know.
So you don't drink any water out of the faucet?
Only if it's like I have to.
Wow. I mean,
I really don't like how it tastes.
I would get a different water filter.
It can't be the water. It's like it's the water.
Oh, weird. I really want to try it now. Next time I'm.
I literally think the pipes are rusted. Or
it might be. Yeah.
Really bad.
Ugh. I'm just afraid of all those fucking microplastics
I know, but it's like, I can't drink it.
You need to drink.
And it's like
water.
The microplastic, the game is over with the microplastics. Like there is nothing that you or I can do about
it. I know.
It's in our clothes. It's in our food. It's everywhere. It's like, that's it.
So then she's at the airport. She gets some nuts. Her start, the PA gets her Starbucks order, which is a London fog with 2% milk and 1 pump of vanilla. Plus,
that sounds nice.
It does sound nice. I like a London fog.
Me too.
And a London fog at Starbucks is nice because you can get the sugar free vanilla, which you can't
get the sugar free vanilla in it.
But she doesn't. She gets regular vanilla. And then she gets oatmeal with nuts and brown sugar. And then they fly to Louisville, Kentucky. Have you ever been to Louisville?
No.
I went once. I really liked it. I really liked that city. She goes to a place called Taco Luchador. And she gets a classic bowl with veggies, rice, refried beans, pico de gallo, slaw, and maduros, and that a topo chico. Good. It does sound good.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And then, this is smart. If you're ordering, so if you get like a per diem for your whole team, then she orders all these things for the table, and then it doesn't, like, she can split it with, it doesn't come out of her DM. So she gets queso, she gets guac, she gets queso fries and extra plantains for the table.
Oh, just to like make them pay for
it. Yeah, just because she's like, if I want to try an appetizer, I just order it for the table, and then it doesn't just come out of my per diem.
Okay.
I mean, that's just her little trick.
That's nice. For her subordinates?
I guess it's not just, I think it's like, for, I don't know, it's whatever team she, it's very vague as to what her actual job is.
Okay.
It says she's a producer, so I don't know, you know, exactly what she's doing. And then she took another, she, I guess, had that old pizza from Madison, she, or from Chicago. She took it on the plane because that night she's heating it up and eating it again. And then Wednesday they fly to Miami. So let's see. Oh, she has a layover in Houston, and she says, I assemble a snacky lunch. I don't want to be associated with the girl dinner discourse, so I'm calling this a snacky lunch.
Okay. Right.
It's like Baby Bell, lesser evil popcorn, Siggy's yogurt, more water. She eats very healthy. I mean, I guess if you're on the road, you sort of have to like go crazy about eating healthy, or you'll just go and, or you'll eat really unhealthy.
Yeah, probably.
And then because she's like the big foodie on her team, she always chooses what restaurants that they go to while they're in different cities. So she chooses a place called Ceviches by Divino, even though she doesn't even eat seafood. She says she's never tried ceviche, but she thinks her friends will like it, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, that's nice.
So she gets a vegetarian ceviche, which I don't even know what that means.
I feel like it's like ceviche, but made with like parts of palm or something.
Oh yeah, hearts of palm, like citrus, maybe. I don't know, something weird. And then let's see. Okay, then they go to New York the next day. This is so much. I would be so exhausted.
Yeah.
They have a post-shoot party at the Ritz. And I was a little confused as if she meant the Ritz-Carlton Hotel or the Ritz gay bar in Hell's Kitchen.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess if you say the Ritz and you're not a gay guy, you mean the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, I would assume.
I don't know. There's no link.
No. And it says she has like mushroom tacos with hot sauce. It just seems like maybe it is the gay bar, because that the what they eat seems more like gay bar than fancy hotel.
Wait, you said they got mushroom.
Oh wait, no, that's at the hotel. Let's see, the hotel restaurant. The post shoot drinks at the Ritz is margarita flatbread, cauliflower flatbread, and cheese from a charcuterie board. Yeah, I guess it probably is the hotel. And Negronis. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably the hotel. The
hotel, yeah. So this is like if the production is paying for them to have drinks at the Ritz-Carlton, that's like pretty fancy for a reality show, wouldn't you think?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And they're in New York for a while. So she goes to like Cafe Mogador in Williamsburg, which I think is over. That place has always been overrated to me. People love it.
I don't know it.
It's like it's been in the East Village forever. And then I think they opened one in Williamsburg, but it's like Moroccan brunch. It was like the first place where they would have like shakshuka in New York.
Oh, okay.
And it's been around forever. And then I guess she's staying in Fort Greene. So she goes to like all these Fort Greene places. For All Things Good, which is like a Oaxacan place, a grocery store called Greenville Garden, and then because she's staying at an apartment, she's actually able to cook for the first time that week.
Oh,
and she makes Ali Slagle's sheet pan feta with chickpeas and tomatoes from rival publication New York Times Cooking. It's pretty bold to not shout out a Bon Appetit recipe, I think.
No, they don't. They make like, are there's making like they make New York Times recipes all the time
in the receipt. No, I guess you're right.
Yeah, I think so.
I definitely cook out of New York Times Cooking more than I cook out of Bon Appetit.
Oh my god.
And then she goes to drinks in Williamsburg. And then we're at the weekend. She's doing Fort Greene Farmers Market. She shouts out all the different fucking apple orchards or whatever.
Okay.
And then she just, that night is like her last night in town. So she makes a quote unquote use it up pasta with leftover groceries.
Okay.
And then it's the end of the week. So she gets blackout drunk. And she says has 4 to 5 Negronis.
Oh my God. Oh, party. That makes me sick.
It sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
And they have their wrap party at this place called the Ivory Peacock, which is in like the West 20. Like it's like nomad area. I couldn't figure out what production. I mean, I don't even have a hint of like what show this could be.
The Ivory.
It says our well-earned wrap party is at Plume, which is the basement of the Ivory Peacock, an open bar with past apps. I mean, they're
wow. Having, this must be a big. I guess it's a big.
It must be
show.
Like HBO or Netflix or something.
I think. I don't know. I just always think that like these are like they're like so cheap.
Yeah, especially. I mean, she says unscripted docuseries, which to me that's like euphemism for reality show,
right?
And she's traveling to all these different. I mean, I could see it being like a home renovation thing, maybe. I don't know.
The Ivory Peacock looks cute. It doesn't look.
It's the name. It sounds like really terrifying and grotesque, but then it's actually like a, looks like it's like a pretty building.
Yeah. Like I looked at the, it just looks like a sort of a nice, you know, regular bar.
Just, yeah. But it doesn't, like when I hear the Ivory Peacock, my mind goes to something. Actually, it kind of does look, now that I think about it, it does kind of look like the Ivory Peacock, what I think the Ivory Peacock would look like. Yeah, no, it does. But whatever, more power to them. It's probably not that expensive for these people, for the production company to show up.
Yeah. I wish I knew what I show it was. I just don't know how this
shit works.
And I like that the receipt this week sort of went out on a limb and did something different. But I think in all, I like it better when you really get to know like someone's home life and like their community rather than just traveling.
Yeah, it's not really as interesting because it's like, well, okay. It's like just a bunch of like random places you go when you're like on the road.
Yeah.
And I mean, it does sound like she kind of tried to, like, it sounds like she's on the road a lot. So she's like trying to like incorporate, you know, it's like her way of doing it. It's not like a foreign thing for her.
Yeah, and she knows how to, because I think if you're not used to traveling or you only, you know, travel once or twice a year, your body just like goes into shock as far as like food.
Yeah, I think so too.
And so she seems like very good at balancing, like going out, eating restaurant food, drinking, and then being like, okay, I'm just having like nuts and yogurt for the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not the most interesting receipt, but it really makes me glad I am not a reality show producer and work 16-hour days, because I would be exhausted.
I would too. I couldn't do it. When I worked in like that, something like it, when I was like a stylist assistant, it was absolutely exhausting. And so stressful. And yeah, those people would always like get like super blackout drunk like at the end of the thing. And it was just like, I don't think it's like a healthy life.
No, I think all that stuff, like, I mean, anyone who's, yeah, any job that you have to work 12 to 16 hour days, no matter what you're doing, it's like not healthy.
It's not good for you, but people like it.
Yeah, I think there's definitely people who they don't know what to do with themselves when they're not working. So it's like, same with like people that work at restaurants.
Yeah, those people are intense too. All right, let's like plow through this list.
Yeah, all right. Cool. All right, what was your best of the week?
So my best of the week was actually like just something that I thought was interesting. I don't know. It's not even like something that I actually think is good, but we have this, sex article, another magic trick for reviving your sex life. And there's this kind of list of things that you're supposed to, it says start with savoring, and there's something that they suggest, which is to have temporal awareness, which just means to like be aware of like how short your life is and to focus on the idea that you're like choosing to spend your time like experiencing and like savoring this moment. And honestly, to be honest, I think that if I was like having sex and I decided like I'm gonna become super aware of like being in the, if I was like time is short, I would like be freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess like sex and death are linked, but time is too much of a head fuck for me. Like, it's too stressful. But I like the idea of like incorporating temporal awareness into your life in general. Not necessarily, I mean, yeah, if that helps with like your sex life, yes. But also just to like think about
yourself in relation to time. I like it as a concept.
Yeah, I mean, this article was my craziest.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because it was sort of all over the place, because it was like, it was supposed to be like, you know, sex tips to make your sex life better or whatever. But then she's like quoting like Audre Lorde and like having all these like big profound sort of revelations. And then the temporal awareness, I feel like it's a double-edged sword, because I do like sometimes to be like, this is how I'm spending my time, and, you know, appreciating, you know, every day that you have, and that like life is fleeting or whatever. But that awareness can get, for me at least, it can get dark really quickly if you think about it too much.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's like a natural, yeah, like that's why the time is not like a pleasant thing to consider usually, because like there's an end to it for us. Yeah. And like that's why people are like looking for like eternity and like religion or whatever. If anything, I think if you're having sex or like engaging in something that's like very pleasurable, I think sex is like one thing. I also feel like you can have these moments when you're like engaging with like art or literature or whatever, like even like a really good conversation with a friend. Like the idea is to be like incredibly like plugged in and fully immersed in the thing that's in front of you and in the moment, and not to be thinking of yourself as like a mortal being, but just to like be present.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of useful for anything in life. Cause like she goes into like sensory perceptual sharpening, which is sort of just another way of saying mindfulness. And then she's talking about sex specifically, but I think that mindfulness, like, I mean, you know, we've talked about a million articles where they talk about mindfulness and like whether it's, you know, cutting an onion and like, you know, really concentrating on that, or washing the dishes or whatever it is, it is like useful to just like concentrate on one thing at a time. And it's like so hard to do that in our, you know, modern age.
Yeah, it's like it's hard to focus on the thing that's in front of you. But I don't know. Again, I feel like that's the reason people are usually like having sex in the first place, is because like they need to like detach from this, I don't know, the real
to get
world.
Out of, yeah, their butt, yeah, to feel something. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we're just insane, but I don't think so. I think that that's pretty normal.
Yeah, it's like the concentrating on one very intense form of pleasure allows your mind to focus. But then there's a lot of times you're having sex and it's, your mind is all over the place. So
I guess, yeah. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting concept. That's why it's my best, but I don't actually know if I agree with it.
I liked part of it, but then I was like, I don't really need to read this book. And then,
there's no way in hell I'm reading this book.
And then when she's talking about like the erotic is a measure between the beginnings of our sense of self and the chaos of our strongest feelings. A lot of people whose bodies and sexualities defy the handbooks they were given at birth already have practice at ignoring the rules and choosing for themselves. LGBTQIA2+ folks. What is the two?
Two-spirit.
Oh, that's two-spirit. Okay. BIPOC folks, lots of disabled or neurodivergent folks, fat folks, and aging folks. It's like, what is this, 2020? Like, why are we still saying folks?
Also, it's like by the end of that list, it's like, is there anyone who's not on that list?
Just Gwyneth Paltrow. Or she's aging now.
Yeah. She's an aging folk.
She's an aging folk. What happens is you already, if you're one of these, you know, repressed groups of people, you already know that you can choose what you like outside the limited offerings of the sex imperatives, because your body's already so disgusting that you, like, I don't know what she's saying, that like people that are aging or disabled or fat are like already they're transcending or transgressing, I guess is the word, like norms.
I have no idea, but I just believe that younger, more attractive people are having more sex and have less hangups about it than less attractive people.
Well, it's either, yeah, really young and really attractive, or like really old and unattractive. It's like,
and like don't give a shit anymore. And then,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Mm. But yeah, the use of folks, like I was like, oh wow, that's like flashback to like 2 years ago.
Is with an X.
Oh no, that would have been really funny. She does spell it the traditional way.
Interesting. Okay. So she's heterodox.
She's a little catnip for the conservatives. Just saying
folks normally.
Oh my god, I saw it was, I really don't know if it was a joke or not, but I saw the word Irish X, meaning, and I was like, this is like so funny if it's a joke or not a joke.
Yeah, either way, it's funny.
It's really funny. I was like, oh, yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that's, you know, it's good. It's the best. It's the craziest. It's,
I mean, it's something worth, it's like, it encourages conversation.
It does. And oh, her name is Emily Nagoski, PhD. And
oh, PhD from where? They don't say.
Wait, it might say if I click the link. It is dun, 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 dun. Author of New York Times bestseller Come As You Are. Oh, that's what the book is called. Come As You Are, the surprising new science that will transform your sex life. Oh, this is the woman. Oh my God, there was an article about her in the New York Times that she's the sex therapist who talks about her relationship. And then I didn't read the article, but apparently her relationship ended really badly. And like all of her, like the things that she was talking about, like it's like talking about how you're so, you know, evolved and you have this great sex life and great relationship. And then it all like comes apart. I recognize her. She definitely has.
Wait, but she wrote about it from the perspective of like it all came apart, right? Or she didn't write about it like it's great and then it came apart.
No, I think she wrote about it like it's great, and then I don't know if her new book is about the end of the relationship. All I saw was it was like the New York Times and was like this sex therapist like got a dose of her own medicine or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
and she definitely has like a hairstyle and a face that you're like, oh yeah, you definitely say folks in your daily life.
Let's see. Interesting. All right. Well, you know, good for her. I hope that.
Yeah. Now I want to read that article.
Yeah, me too.
It doesn't say where she got her PhD. Interesting. All right. So my best was just Gwyneth's little book recommendation, opening salvo.
Yeah, I enjoyed that myself, although I will not probably read any of those books.
I mean, I probably won't either. I do. It was like the Goop book club at the time. I like did not cherish it the way I should have, because I now, when all Goop is just selling products, even something like a book club seems so out of the realm of something.
I know. It's anymore. Like it's just it's now it's like full this. Podcast is just so hard now because it's like literally full shop online.
It's
now.
Just shop, yeah. But Gwyneth had asked for book recommendations. So she read Trust by Hernan Diaz, which won the Pulitzer Prize.
I purchased that book, which I like never buy books like that.
Yeah, it looks good. I do want to read it.
Because I've been wanting to read it. And I was like, I'll read it over my break. I didn't at all. And now there's literally no way in hell I'm reading.
Yeah, you won't have time
until June.
The next book. Well, I'm finishing that Oscar book, and then I'm gonna read I have the new Zadie Smith book on my bedside table.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I will, that's the next thing I'm reading. Mm. But Gwyneth read the new... Have you read any of the Jesmyn Ward's books.
The what?
Her name's Jessamine Ward. She like has won. She's already won the Pulitzer like twice. She's like this young author that's apparently very good. I've never read anything by her.
No.
And then Barbara Kingsolver's Demon Copperhead.
That was another one that I kind of wanted to read, but I was kind of like, I don't actually think I want to read this. I just like feel like I should read it.
I've never even read David Copperfield, so I feel like I can't read that without having read David Copperfield. So I'm like, what's the point?
Or like The Bees or whatever. Wasn't her other book like The Bees?
Bean Trees was her big one.
What was it?
Well, The Bean Trees was like in the 90s. It was like a big book.
Wait, what's Barbara?
Barbara Kingsolver. And then Poisonwood Bible is another
big
one.
Poisonwood Bible, yeah.
Yeah. And then this one is like based on David Copperfield, but it's like reimagining David Copperfield as this like Appalachian fentanyl addicted. Like,
I don't think you have to read. I doubt you'd have to read it to get it. Maybe.
And then she wants to read the new Tommy Orange book, which I read his like previous novel that was really good. It was about all these like different Native American characters in Oakland converging on this like Native American festival in the Oakland Coliseum. I don't know. It was really good. And then a bunch of memoirs by people that I don't know who they are.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I do. So out of all those, I think I would like to read Trust. But again, I don't know when I'll get to it. All right, what's your worst?
I think Goop Kitchen is literally going out of business.
Because of the amount of emails that we get begging
us to order
from...
of emails, the quality of the food, the growing, mounting desperation. I just don't have a good feeling about it. Like, I feel like this is not going well.
I mean, they expanded. It's like they had the Santa Monica one. They have the one in North Hollywood. But then they open in Beverly Hills, which I'm like, just get the, like, that's so close to Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And I think they opened like a Venice one and a Culver City. It was like so many close together. And then the one in Orange County. I just don't think that there's like the audience, unless you're like working at an office and your whole office like orders from Goop Kitchen.
No.
I just feel like there's not much of an audience there for it.
Yeah, I agree. There's I just think that, and also then with the thing with the cleanse, okay, the cleanse is like all ordering from Goop Kitchen. Like, this is desperation if I've ever seen it. They went too far. They fucked up. Yeah, don't miss $5 off the January challenge. No one is doing this.
No, a challenge to order from the same restaurant every day. Because I feel like no one does cleanses anymore. Very dated.
Cleanses are passe.
And that type of like office salad bowl thing, like I feel like Sweetgreen is, again, like, I mean, maybe Sweetgreen is going to do well in places like Madison, Wisconsin or Louisville, Kentucky. But I feel like that whole genre of restaurant is just passe. And Goop Kitchen was like late to join the party.
I mean, passe is like, they were never like, I mean, I guess Sweetgreen was always for like the corporate class. Like,
yeah, but
Sweetgreen was never like cutting edge or anything.
No, and it wasn't like, you know, the food blogs were talking about or whatever. But I remember when that first Sweetgreen opened in New York, it was like, because it was before that we just had, you know, Just Salad, Dig, which back then was called Dig In. And like, I remember people were like, oh, Sweetgreen. Like, this is like, this is changing everything. Like, it's like a salad, an office salad, but good.
I mean, yeah. And I still think it's like kind of like less depressing and disgusting than like those other places.
For sure. But I
it's
like Sweetgreen.
Like in the, it's like fully in that category of like fast casual, like office lunch places.
Yeah. And it's also for people, for single people who don't cook, who have eating disorders.
Yeah. But because, I mean, I'm sure it's like, I feel like it's mostly like lunches.
Well, I would just, my friend that I play tennis with, who's like late 50s gay guy, who I think probably has an eating disorder. He doesn't cook. He orders Sweet Green like every night for dinner. So
I think I go to Sweet Green like twice a month.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I've been in three years.
There's one like right around the corner from Tish.
Mm.
And it's just easy. It's easy and it's like healthy. Like if you don't want to go to like Raising Cane's or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You go there.
Back in the Stone Age when I went to Tish, there was a place right on Astor Place called, I think it was just called Karen's Market, and it was like a old school like vegetarian takeout place that I think was probably popular. It like closed probably in 2002. But that's what we used to get for lunch breaks, and it was so good. And it was just like, you know, 12 grain bread with like avocado and sprouts. I loved it.
Yeah, it's mostly like now everything is mostly just like sort of like chains or like weird little like new, like that, like I don't know what, I forget. It's not just salad, it's like Fresh and Co.
There's
Fresh and Co.
But sometimes those Fresh and Co. ones are good because you get like a like bacon ranch Southwestern salad and stuff, and it's
there. Okay. Yeah, there's that. There's like Pret a Manger, Sweet Green, Raising Cane's, McDonald's. Like that's like what's right there.
Yeah, I've never been to Raising Cane's. It's good.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I feel like the young people go there all the time. I can't go as much. I can't go there all the time, but the like young 20-year-old hotties can eat it.
Ooh, I want to try.
It's like, yeah.
It's just chicken fingers?
Yeah, it's just chicken fingers.
All right. Who did you say your worst?
Well, my worst is just my prediction that Good Kitchen.
Closed. Oh yes. It's gonna, I think, do you think by the end of 2024 it'll be closed?
I think it's not coming like soon.
But it could also be just a vanity, like they could just keep it going at a loss, because
yeah, I feel like Gwyneth Paltrow could just like keep it going for as long as she wants to, and maybe it's profitable. I mean, maybe they're cutting so many corners, the quality is so low that it's just like it's so cheap for them to do it that they're making money.
Yeah.
But if she had just, and I'm telling you, the problem is the ghost kitchen thing.
The ghost kitchen, it's
the
also
office lunch element of it. It's like, make this. I'm sure, you know what? I take it back. I'm sure that there are still like girls who like get Goop Kitchen every day sent to their office. There has to be Santa Monica.
Probably. There I just feel like Goop has such a patina of like inaccessibility and luxury that when you're charging $13 for a salad, the same as Sweet Green or whatever, and then there's an Erewhon that is like, they've done a good job branding themselves as like the most inaccessible, luxurious place to like get that type of lunch. Goop Kitchen is not going to be able to compete.
But Goop Kitchen is cheaper.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't want it to be cheaper. Like, you want it to be the most expensive. You want it to be like the most inaccessible. If you're Goop. Maybe not.
I don't know.
And also you can't get Erewhon on DoorDash.
Yeah, I think it's like they'll deliver it. Actually, you can get it on Postmates.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, I used to see it on Postmates all the time and like think about ordering it and then being like, you're literally crazy. Stop this right now.
It's good, but like you are truly crazy if you get one, because it's like a salmon bowl with two sides is, I mean, before the delivery fees, before anything, you're talking $30 base price. And
for like this like stupid shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hate Erewhon. The only thing I ever got from there were smoothies, and I didn't get them very often.
All right. My worst was just the Valentine's Day gift guide. Now, according to Goop, you're not only supposed to buy your romantic partner something for Valentine's Day, but apparently it's like Christmas now and you're just supposed to buy everyone something for Valentine's Day.
Well, I guess that's just because they sell things.
They sell things, yeah. So one lady, because it's all these Goop employees that are like talking about what they're getting for Valentine's Day. So one lady's like, for my friends, I love getting, I'm obsessed with these PJs and lip balm. So she's getting all of her friends PJs and lip balm. Okay. Then the CFO of Goop, she actually is giving her partner or her husband. She's pretty vague. She just says, and I'm excited to try some new products and make this year's V-Day date fun and memorable. Okay.
Okay.
Then the senior director of retail operations, his name's Matthew Blythe. He talks about his mother and his wife.
That's, yeah, I saw that. It was like, what I'm getting my wife and my mother. Like, what's
same
wrong
difference?
With
I can't tell them apart.
Yeah, I think you're insane.
And he just says, I'm choosing gifts that bring a touch of indulgence, luxuries they wouldn't treat themselves to. Okay. Oh, and then Denise John, who is, you know, as we all know, Gerda's less than impressive replacement. She is just talking about giving herself fucking dildos. She's like,
yeah. Me. And then there always has to be some woman where they're like, say you're gonna give yourself a dildo, and she's like, I don't want to do that. And they're like, say it.
Fine.
You gotta move these dildos. Although, weren't you saying that the dildo, I heard the dildos are like their top selling products.
That's what I don't know if I've definitely heard that, but I don't know who from or what the source is.
I heard it from somewhere, but I don't know. I believe it. I know people who bought their dildos.
Goop. And they like them?
No, they don't.
No.
They're dumb.
All right. What's your craziest or your saddest?
My scariest is Tracy Anderson's at-home workout machine. Did you see it?
No.
It's called a My Mode. It literally looks like a weird, like, European S&M torture device. It's a wood block, and it has, like, a large wooden pole, these, like, wooden looking hand weights, and some mysterious like gears and cranks and like some pad, just like lots of ropes and pads, and you buy just all this shit from her, and you can use it to do Tracy Anderson workouts in the comfort of your own home, and it costs $2,629 and you cannot get a refund on it. Final sale.
Yeah, it looks like those like wooden toys that like liberal parents buy their kids that they don't want to use plastic or something.
Yeah, it says you have a staff which clinks into a puck on the ground or sockets in the box and doubles as a barbell with the addition of attachable weights, a plush pad for kneeling movements, and a pair of 3-pound hand weights. If the workout sounds a bit abstract, let Tracy demystify it. This equipment goes along with tailor-made workouts on Tracy Anderson's online studio, which is like an additional like $100 a month. So it's like you are paying so much money for this.
For like a wooden stick and a box.
On-demand and live stream classes.
I mean, is it that hard to just do some jumping jacks?
I don't know. I don't know why you'd have to do this. I mean, Tracy, talk about inaccessible. This shit is so expensive. I had a TA studio in my old neighborhood, and I was like, maybe I'll join that. And I was like, I will not. It was like, I can't remember how much it cost, but it was like something insane. It was like $400 a month or something.
Yeah, that's crazy. And people, I'm sorry, like maybe some people will really like this, but for most people, in order to stay with an exercise program, it just has to be like simple and easy to do.
It's just, yeah, it's too complicated. It's too insane. I think you have to like get into like the cult of it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's. Did you? We saw. So I think someone sent us that little video of like her daughter, like she's like trying to make her daughter like a pop star, and it just comes across as like Nazi youth Leni Riefenstahl shit.
I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, so someone, I think one of our listeners sent us a video of like, it was like this creepy blonde teenage girl like singing, and we were like, why is this on Tracy Anderson's Instagram account? But it's her daughter like trying to break into the industry.
I can't even begin to unpack that. It's honestly, it's so sad.
It's like pathological. I mean, I guess if you are any sort of exercise influencer, you are probably gonna have to have like an eating disorder because your livelihood depends on you looking perfect. But
they did take her diet advice off the website.
Oh yeah, they'll like eat half a Tracy Anderson bar.
You were supposed to, I still remember it though. You were supposed to have like a scoop of protein powder mixed into iced tea in the morning, or you could have like a small bowl of berries. And then for lunch, you were supposed to have a salad, just like a green salad with like some protein on it, basically. And then for dinner again, you're supposed to have like fish and steamed vegetables. It wasn't that crazy, but it was pretty low calorie.
Yeah, and like pretty no room for fun.
She said you could have like one square of dark chocolate every night, as they all do. And she also said you could have 1 to 2 glasses of wine a day.
Oh, all right. That's like 4-hour body. You're allowed 2 glasses of wine a day.
Yeah, I feel like, well, I don't know. I guess it depends if you really like it. But because it's only like, that would only be like 200 or 300 calories.
Yeah, and if you're just eating like fish and vegetables and protein powder, you probably have a fair amount of calories.
You have a little
spare.
Bit of room. Yeah.
I had a glass of wine last night because I made chicken piccata and I had to use some wine to cook it with. So,
yeah, I feel like I think I'm going to have a glass of wine tonight. I haven't had, well, you know, I have to limit alcohol now.
Oh, because of your new South Beach lifestyle?
Yeah, which I'm like only kind of halfway doing. Yeah,
that's all right. Any little bit counts.
Yeah. But I have to limit alcohol, but we'll see.
All right, I already said my craziest, so now,
oh yeah, your craziest was that,
was the sex one.
My
so what
thing
would you try?
I would try was, oh, I mean, I wouldn't really, this originally was my craziest, and then I was like, I guess I'll just say something I would try, but the cozy comfort meals.
Oh.
I mean, there's just something to me that's like depressing when they're like, it's worse to me than if there's like a really like orthorexic fucked up recipe with like 5 million ingredients. It's sadder to me when they're like, here's how you can make like some like decadent shit and try to make it taste like, you know, real food, but you're actually making it, it's like gluten-free and whatever. Like that makes me depressed thinking of these women like trying to make themselves like a Hasselback potato or something.
Yeah,
it's like just don't even do it, honestly. Just like eat your salad.
The grossest one was, so this is an Australian chef named Josh Emmett.
Yeah.
The grossest one to me was the mac and cheese, because it was like gluten-free pasta, which fine if you have like a gluten allergy or whatever, and yeah, then it still has a ton of cheese, but then he puts half a cup of cornstarch instead of making a roux. Oh, because you can't use flour. And so I'm like, it's just going to taste like the consistency of like Chinese food. That's the only thing I could think of. Like that,
yeah,
you know, like cornstarch
corn
texture.
Starch.
I was like, that sounds so disgusting. But granted,
I think I would just not make, well, I guess, how do you make a, how
I mean,
do you
could,
make a cheese sauce if you can't use flour?
Well, you could do Southern style mac and cheese and just use gluten-free pasta and not make a roux. If you're still using real cheese, then.
But how do you make it? Because you mix, so you're supposed to like make like a bechamel sauce and then also use real shredded cheese in it as well.
Yeah, there's like a type of mac and cheese that's baked and that you just use cheese and cream, and you don't make any sort of roux or bechamel sauce. I feel like you could do that.
Okay, because usually with that baked mac and cheese, there's also the bechamel sauce.
There is, oh, maybe I'm misremembering.
But you know who has a really good mac and cheese, a stovetop mac and cheese recipe that doesn't have a roux is Allison Roman.
Oh, I've had that one before. It is really good.
It is really good, yeah.
I almost decided to like pay for the Allison Roman newsletter because she has this like mushroom soup recipe that's like behind a paywall and it looks so good. I wanted to try it, but
yeah,
I can't spend another fucking $5 on anything.
I'm not spending any more money. I can't even talk about, I just signed up for another subscription service, which it turned out we already had because I couldn't figure out like where it was. And it turned out Brian had it on some weird thing. And I just wanted to find out the name of this one movie that was on a documentary on Shudder of all places. And I was like, I have to know what this is. And so I just paid the $6 so I could like watch it. And then I couldn't even find it. And then I had to just Google it and I found it Googling it. And this is, and I'm going to keep the subscription for the next 2 years. I just know it.
Yeah. Shudder's one that, well, cause I do have AMC Plus, which I probably should just delete because I don't watch it. And Shudder's on that, but I don't watch anything. I only watch tennis. So it doesn't really, I should just get rid of everything. Cause I just only watch tennis. So
yeah,
it makes no sense. But yeah. Okay. Long story short, the thing I would try is this fucking crazy guy's the chicken orzo bake does look really good.
Yeah, it does look good.
And it's not like, it's not a diet food at all.
No.
But I went back and I had carbs with dinner this week because I made this like Italian bread soup and it fucked with my stomach. I really think I need to like limit carbs in that in the evening. So I wouldn't do the orzo. I would do cauliflower and then I don't know how I would change the recipe, but
how did the carbs affect your stomach?
I mean, just like, you know, gas, being uncomfortable. It was like, yeah, I don't know. And then last night, all I had was chicken piccata, which did have some, cause you drench it in flour. So it did have some carbs, but then I just had the chicken breasts with salad. And I felt beautiful all night. So I don't know.
It's got to be the carbs.
Maybe it was the, but also that fucking soup, that bread soup also had like beans and kale and stuff. So who knows? I'm going to blame the carbs though.
Well, beans and kale are carbs too.
Those are, yeah. Yeah. I guess I meant bread specifically or starch. All right. Bye. What would we buy?
Oh, I would buy the Rahua. Oh man, I can't even read my own writing. I think it says Enchanted Island Body Glow Watch for $30. It looks really nice. It looks like it smells really good.
Rahua. And
I actually don't need body wash at the moment. But yeah, Enchanted Island. I like it because it's called Enchanted Island and because it has glow. It's a creamy body cleanser. It leaves skin silky. It's their first ever body collection exclusively on Goop for a limited time. Made with a nourishing blend of rainforest derived ingredients. Like, I can't read it. That stuff I can't read. But what does it smell like? It smells like coconut and guava.
That sounds, oh God, that's great.
Yeah.
I love an island smell.
Me too, especially in like the dead of winter when you want to kill yourself.
Yes. I just saw it. Oh, so
I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say my body wash that I've just had for a couple years now that I like is just the Jason Rosewater one that you can get at Whole Foods.
Yeah, I just get a similar. I can't remember. I think it's called like, I can't remember what it's called. It's like a little. It's like a white like rectangle bottle. And it's like lavender or something.
Oh yeah.
It's like
yeah,
a clean one from but you get it from the drugstore.
All right, what I would buy. Oh, from the Valentine's Day gift guide, there's a $1,300 tiny little wine fridge.
I used to want a wine fridge so bad when I was like really into wine, but now I don't.
Yeah, I don't really I mean, I had a wine fridge. I had a tiny
little fridge. You had that wine fridge right after you guys got married because you had all those bottles of champagne.
That's right. And it was at Costco. It was $200 and it was a little fridge and it was great for a time. And then it just, the engine just completely pooped out after a couple of years. So I threw it away and I didn't really need to replace it.
Yeah.
But the only thing is, in LA in the summer, unless you're cranking the AC on all the time, you really can't like store wine in your apartment because it'll just get too hot. So that's.
Yeah. I mean, I also like usually just keep bottles of wine in my fridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I keep red wine in the fridge too. And then I just like take it out and let it come to room temperature a little bit.
I mean, you should always serve red wine at a little bit under room temperature. So you're probably.
I mean, some of it is room temperature and some of it is actually cellar temperature, which is.
That's what I kept my wine fridge at cellar temp. Or I tried to there at least. Go.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, my brain, I literally have no brain cells left.
I think we're good. I think this is like the longest podcast. Again, another insanely long podcast, whatever. That's fine.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. If you want, more Goop Yourself, please go to our Patreon and join, $5 a month. There's I think 70 or 80 episodes on there now. So it's a lot.
We have so many episodes of the show, guys. Okay. This was a free one though, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.